Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, February 8th, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
A Zimbabwean takes President Mugabe to court, claiming that the president is no longer able to govern due to old age and poor health.
I think everybody can see that there are serious questions around his health and mental ability. Well, the Constitution does not require me for in this application to prove it. What?
The MDC, led by Welshman Ncube, demotes Secretary General Moses Mzilandlovu.
This is one hallmark of a dictatorial, style of administration. It's dictatorial.
The World Food Programme is preparing to scale up food distribution in Zimbabwe following a declaration of a state of disaster by President Robert Mugabe.
It looks like the situation is getting more serious in terms of food insecurity. We estimated that there were 1.5 million people who are facing hunger in Zimbabwe. The government has announced that this figure has in fact gone up to 2.4 million people.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
A British-based Zimbabwean lawyer who filed an application asking the Constitutional Court to make a finding that there is evidence to show that President Robert Mugabe now lacks the mental and physical capacity to carry on as president and must step down says his lawsuit aims at putting pressure on Parliament to probe Mugabe's capability to continue on the helm. Chinomudaishe Chinyoka, a former student leader at the University of Zimbabwe, cites Section 97 of the Zimbabwe Constitution that calls for the stepping down of the president if he is mentally or physically incapacitated, since it will be a violation of the Constitution. In the application filed on Friday, Chinyoka cites as respondents President Mugabe, the Minister of Justice, Legal and Parliamentary Affairs, the Speaker of the House of Assembly, President of the Senate, and the Government of Zimbabwe. The application cites the incident where Mr. Mugabe, who turns 92 this month, slipped and fell as one of the indications that he is no longer able to physically run the country. He also cites a number of gaffes that Mr. Mugabe has made, which include rereading a speech that he had read a few weeks before, and that he is always falling asleep during meetings as indications that he's no longer fit to run the country. Chinyoka tells Studio 7 that he hopes that the court will force Parliament to institute an investigation into the president's health.
The circumstances that have been happening over the last two, I think everybody can see that there are serious questions around his health and mental ability.
Supporters will argue that you cannot prove his incapacitation. What do you say to that?
Well, the Constitution does not require me for in this application to prove it. What it requires is for Parliament to carry out an investigation as to whether or not he has capacity. If it is true that the president is, for example, visiting a cancer treatment hospital in Singapore, that is a relevant fact we need to know. We need to know what kind of medication is he taking. What kind of effect does it have on his ability? These are all things that Parliament will be able to explore in an investigation.
In other words, are you asking Parliament to launch a probe?
Well, in effect, yes, because the Constitution says that it is Parliament that should do the investigation, but Parliament has not carried out that investigation. And in my application, what I'm saying is that is because both the Speaker of Parliament and the President of the Senate are from his party, and they are simply sitting on the power that they've been given, and they are not doing it.
That was lawyer Tinomudaishe Chinyoka. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Britain. Constitutional law expert Love Momaduku tells Studio 7's Gibbs Dube that Chinyoka's case has no legal basis.
That is a very, very clear abuse of the constitutional court system that we have in the country. It may actually be characterized as frivolous or vexatious. And that is a very typical example of a case that is frivolous. Whenever you allege the incapacity of the president, that is dealt with by the political framework which is provided for in the Constitution. It is only Parliament that may instigate a process called impeachment. So you cannot always reduce issues into legal issues. Some issues are political. Yes, as we will not ask a court to elect the next president of the country. It will have to be an election by the people. So also removing the president on the grounds cited in that application, it cannot be done by a court.
So in a way, you're saying this is a waste of time and it's just meaningless.
It is not a legal point. That's what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that there are some issues that, by their very nature, are not legal issues, although they will be important issues. The capacity of the president is a very important issue. But it's not a question for the court.
Yes, and can you educate people on how the president can be removed from power? Just briefly.
I mean, there are always two ways of doing it. One is legal, which is success. You can have mass power, mass demonstrations, and so on. And if the president leaves, that is illegal. But that is not a very common way. But the most significant second way is through what is called an impeachment process. One third of the members of the National Assembly must sign a petition for the motion, to move a motion for a discussion relating to the impeachment of the president, owing to either incompetence, gross misconduct, or what is called incapacity. Which is what Chinyoka is raising. Chinyoka is raising a question of incapacity. And incapacity is a question that will be determined by that. So that debate will have to take place, and two-thirds of the members of Parliament, that is a joint thing of the National Assembly and the Senate, must vote in favor of removing a president. So you will need the support of the ZANU-PF MPs to remove the president lawfully. In Parliament, which, as you know, will not be practiced.
That was constitutional law expert Lovemo Maduku speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube.
Meanwhile, a Zimbabwean, Owen Kuchata, of the opposition Zimbabwe People's Front, appeared in court Friday facing charges of sabotage or alternatively terrorism or allegedly attempting to bomb a Gushunga Holdings entity owned by President Robert Mugabe's family. According to the Daily News, Kuchata is set to stand trial after indicating that there was nothing wrong with attacking Mr. Mugabe's personal property. He initially pleaded guilty but has now changed his mind on issues related to attacking the person of the president and matters related to him as a Zimbabwean. Kuchata is said to have teamed up with three other people, Bowman Ngwenya, Solomon Makombe, and Silas Fupa, to allegedly bomb the farm in Mazowe, Mashonaland's central province. They are facing additional charges of insurgency, banditry, and money laundering. They were remanded to February 16th.
Former MDC Secretary General Moses Mzilandlovu says he was removed from his post following suspicions that he wanted to topple party leader Welshman Ncube. Mzilandlovu has described as misleading remarks attributed to the party that he was relieved of his duties due to incompetence. Our correspondent Taurai Shaba has more.
Mzilandlovu told Studio 7 today that his removal from the position of MDC Secretary General has nothing to do with failing to carry out his duties in the party. While saying that he doesn't view himself as being victimized, he said the real reason for his removal from the party post was that Ncube was blaming him for the disgruntlement that party members have expressed over his leadership. Mzilandlovu admitted that he would have accepted the nomination to stand as president at the forthcoming MDC Congress.
My conviction is that because the grassroots membership and the other people in leadership were getting agitated and frustrated with the, you know, the non-effectiveness of the party, starting with the poor performance, you know, ever since 2013, or even before 2013 elections.
Mm.
And people were trying to say, let's identify our reasons for our poor performance in the elections.
The MDC announced the sacking of Mzilandlovu from the position of Secretary General over the weekend, saying he was incompetent and failed to perform the duties expected of his post. But Mzilandlovu said Ncube used his position to instigate his firing because of personal differences that exist between them. He added that, like most leaders of Zimbabwean politics, Ncube does not brook any opposing view and is dictatorial in his leadership.
Whilst we stand up to oppose ZANU-PF, we ourselves have been so rubber-stamped with the way ZANU-PF does things. And we don't realize that it's like you're cut from the same cloth to make a different garment. This is one hallmark of a dictatorial, you know, style of administration. It's dictatorial. It says in the press statement, it was unanimously agreed. And when you have an issue like this, and you say it's unanimous, it's like a Saddam Hussein kind of election where he gets 99% of the vote.
Efforts to get comment from Ncube were fruitless, as he was said to be busy attending various meetings. But in a brief statement in response to Mzilandlovu's assertions, MDC spokesperson Kuraone Chiwai maintained that the former National Healing Minister had been dumped because he didn't understand the duties of Secretary General. In an interview with a local newspaper, Chiwai said Mzilandlovu was, quote, a pathological liar without any traces of shame. Mzilandlovu became the latest senior member to leave the MDC following the departure of the national spokesperson Joshua Muhambi last year. This had been preceded by the departure of former spokesperson Nhlanhla Dube and the stepping down of Priscilla Misairabwe Mshonga from the post of Secretary General. Some observers see the party as being on the verge of collapse. Mzilandlovu said these options remain open, but he ruled out the chance of ever working with Ncube again, saying he would only associate with people who share his belief in the principles of democracy. The developments in the MDC come at a time when Zimbabweans are expressing disgruntlement with opposition parties over their failure to offer any meaningful solutions to the country's social, economic, and political crisis. Reporting for Studio 7 from Bulawayo, this is Taurai Shaba.
The World Food Programme is preparing to scale up food distribution around the country following a declaration of a state of disaster by President Robert Mugabe last week. The number of people needing food assistance is now being estimated at 2.4 million as opposed to the 1.5 estimated earlier. David Orr, the communications officer for Southern Africa for the World Food Programme, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the situation is serious.
It looks like the situation is getting more serious in terms of food insecurity. We estimated that there were 1.5 million people who were facing hunger in Zimbabwe. The government has announced that this figure has in fact gone up to 2.4 million people. So the situation is indeed serious. And given the forecast regarding the lack of rain and the impact of this on the harvest, which is just around the corner, we can indeed expect the figures of those in need to continue rising. That has certainly been the case in many countries in the region, and we may have to revisit the figures that we're currently looking at.
You are raising money for Zimbabwe to help those who are food insecure. How far have you gone with that?
Well, we have operations to assist about 820,000 food insecure people in 38 districts of Zimbabwe. My understanding is that we're about 60% resourced on that for the moment. That's the current lean season operation to give food assistance, which is both by way of food distributions and cash-based transfers where market conditions allow. And this assistance is usually linked to livelihood training so that people to qualify for assistance must do some training in improving their livelihoods, practicing climate-smart agriculture, that sort of thing. We will, of course, look at scaling up our operations now that the numbers have been reassessed. But, of course, this is all linked to our ability to raise the necessary funding to maintain our relief operations there.
With all these wars in Syria, for example, in Afghanistan, is it easy to raise money for food, or there's donor fatigue?
I think we should be a bit wary of talking about donor fatigue, because we've actually seen some donors who've been incredibly generous. But what you say is true. It is a challenge with all the needs elsewhere in the world. So we continue to appeal to our donors to come up with that funding.
World Food Programme Communications Officer for Southern Africa, David Orr, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu.
And now we take a look at regional and international news.
U.S. President Barack Obama says he's concerned but not surprised by North Korea's rocket launch Sunday in a CBS interview that aired Monday. Obama said America has been concerned about North Korea's behavior for a while.
At least 35 migrants are drowned in the Aegean Sea today trying to reach Greece from Turkey.
And U.S. President Obama is asking Congress for more than $1.8 billion in emergency funding to help fight the Zika virus in the United States and other countries.
The European Union has unveiled $40 million for Zimbabwe's Health Development Fund, catering mainly for maternal health, adolescence and related issues. Our correspondent Arthur Chigoriwa reports from the Mashonaland West Provincial Capital.
Speaking at Chinoy General Hospital last Friday, head of the European Union in Harare, Ambassador Philip Van Dam, said Zimbabwe has made tremendous strides in reducing child mortality and maternal death. Van Dam recommended government for helping to reduce the maternal mortality rate from 960 to 614 per 100,000 live births. Speaking at a signing ceremony of the EU's contribution towards the Health Development Fund, UNICEF representative Reza Hosan said although they are chasing very ambitious goals, he hoped that the fund, if properly managed, will contribute to targeted 50% reduction in maternal mortality. Hosan said the European Union's contribution will go a long way in reviving Zimbabwe's health system, which was once the best in the Southern African region. Hosan said collective efforts in the last 5 years saw thousands of lives saved, while many are now living free of diseases thanks to other EU health contributions.
Reviving a health system in Zimbabwe that used to be an example in the region. Through our joint and collective effort over the past 5 years, thousands of lives have been saved and many, many more thousands are living free of diseases. Let me here take the opportunity to extend my heartfelt thanks to all those frontline health workers in Zimbabwe who were instrumental in transforming the health service delivery in their community. To them, we all owe the impressive achievement the country has made in reducing maternal and child mortality over the past few years.
Giving a provincial perspective at the same occasion, maternal and child health officer for Mashonaland West, Dr. Justin Mudaranu, said about 6 women die daily in the country from pregnancy-related complications. Dr. Mudaranu said the leading causes of maternal death include hemorrhage, malaria, and protracted labor.
The province, like the rest of the country, yes, high maternal mortality ratios, which at present is 614 per 100,000 live births, which translates to about 6 women dying every day of pregnancy-related complications in Zimbabwe. This figure is 2 times higher than the global average of 287 per 100,000 live births.
One of the beneficiaries of the Health Development Fund last year, Mrs. Tatenda Mamombe, said she benefited from fistula treatment after suffering from injuries when she was giving birth in 2013. Mrs. Mamombe, who had a loose bladder, had almost lost hope of ever recovering from internal injuries.
For the longest time in my life, I had no idea that I could get surgery and actually live a normal life. And I would like to thank the UNFPA and their partners, including the doctors brought in by Women and Health Alliance, for the surgery that repaired me.
Health and Child Welfare Minister Dr. David Parerenyatwa thanked the EU for the donation, saying they treat Zimbabweans as equal partners, unlike other countries which he did not mention. Dr. Parerenyatwa noted that the Health Development Fund has enabled the government to have at least 3 doctors in each hospital in the country. Reporting for Studio 7 in Shinoi, this is Arthur Chikoriwa.
Factionalism is worsening in ZANU-PF with war veterans leader Chris Mutswangwa now calling for the expulsion of Education Minister Jonathan Moyo and Local Government Minister Xavier Kasukuere. The two ministers are accused of allegedly using First Lady Grace Mugabe and a faction of the party known as Generation 40 or G40 in trying to block Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa's expected rise to the presidential post. Mutswangwa is quoted by the state-controlled Herald newspaper as saying the two are already trying to unseat President Mugabe. Moyo, who is being targeted by furious war veterans leader, is being urged not to attend weekly ZANU-PF Politburo meetings and has hit back, saying it's the Mutswangwa camp, the Mnangagwa camp, I beg your pardon, that is trying to topple the president. The ruling party's presidential succession battles are threatening to tear the former liberation movement, which is led by the 91-year-old Zimbabwean leader, apart. Studio 7's Ntunga Milinkomo speaks with Joseph Chuma, a ZANU-PF lawmaker and central committee member, about what's happening in the party.
It's a personal fight that people are carrying on, and look, you just get taken aback, actually, and wonder what is really happening. But the honest truth is that whatever they're doing, it's their personal, I think it's their personal freedom of expression, if you want to call it that way, but which has nothing to do with us, nothing to do with the party, I'm sure.
And why is the president not stopping this fight?
You're asking a very, very wrong question to the very wrong guy, because I don't speak for the president. And I don't presume to know what the president thinks at any given time. This is not a party issue, it's a personal issue. Two people have decided to full out on a war path. That doesn't really have to do anything with the party.
That was Joseph Chuma, ZANU-PF lawmaker and central committee member, speaking with Studio 7.
Conveners of the Itai Dzamara prayer meetings, together with his family, are planning to meet with Justice Minister and Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa sometime this week over the government's lack of support in the search for the missing political activist. Bishop Anselmo Magaya, who leads the Itai Dzamara Trust and the Zimbabwe Divine Destiny Trust, says they resolved in a meeting today in Harare to send a delegation, which includes a member of the Dzamara family, to meet with the vice president. This comes at a time when the nation marks exactly 11 months after the activist was abducted by unknown assailants in Harare's Glenview suburbs. The Itai Dzamara Trust is tomorrow holding a lunch hour prayer meeting at Africa Unity Square, the place where Dzamara's Occupy Africa Unity Square group launched a campaign for President Robert Mugabe to step down, claiming that he has failed to properly run the country. Bishop Magaya tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri they feel the police are not following or respecting a court order which compelled them to update the nation on the progress in looking for the missing activist after every 2 weeks.
We are inviting everybody who is going to be free and who has got to fight the matter and security of persons on heart. So we are inviting church leaders, we are inviting civil society, but even political parties, we are also inviting them.
You were planning to meet with Justice Minister, who also is one of the vice presidents, Mr. Emmerson Mnangagwa, over the Tide Zamara issue. How far have you gone with this plan?
In fact, our meeting today was looking at that program and at that plan. We have done the document. We have identified the members of the delegation that will go and see the vice president. So tomorrow we will try to secure an appointment, and as soon as that is done, we will update you.
The government was tasked to update the nation about its search for Mr. Itai Zamara. How often is the government doing this?
No, they're not doing that at all. They were actually told that they should be updating the nation, they should be updating the family, and the families are continually desperate, and they're not receiving any information. And that is one of the reasons, really, why we are having to call and talk to the minister, so that he also uses his power, really, as the Minister of Justice, to be able to ensure that happens. But also, he's a father, he's a husband, a wife, and we also want to appeal to his conscience to make sure that Itai Zamara really reconciles with his family.
That was Bishop Anselmo Magaya of the Itai Zamara Trust on the phone from Harare with reporter Jonga Kandemiri.
Zimbabweans living in Canada who are facing possible deportation have an additional 6 months to apply for permanent residency to remain in that country. The extension, which was announced on the Canadian government's website Friday, applies also to Haitians and essentially calls on the Canada Border and Services Agency to defer any removals of affected persons with pending applications. According to the announcement, the extension is in addition to the temporary suspension of removals given to the citizens of the two countries on December 1, 2014, and affects those who have not applied for permanent residence in Canada based on humanitarian and compassionate grounds. Canada's country's ministry of Public Safety and Emergency Preparedness, Ralph Goodale, is quoted in the announcement saying that the special measures, quote, support Canada's rich humanitarian tradition and will give more opportunities for Haitians and Zimbabweans to build successful lives in Canada.
Zimbabwe and South Sudan's Ministries of Education, Science and Technology have signed a memorandum of understanding to educate students and share expertise. We now hear from Dimyake Makalele, who spoke about the issue.
The Minister of Education, Science and Technology signed a memorandum of understanding with the Minister of Education, Science and Technology of the Republic of Zimbabwe, and by offering over 200 scholarships to different universities and teachers' colleges in Zimbabwe so as to have the capacity for our students and to help the training and higher education for the children of South Sudan. And our Minister of Higher Education, Science and Technology is already on his way to Zimbabwe in order to complete some of the areas which are required to be finished and clarified.
What areas of expertise are you seeking?
These are South Sudanese students going to study in Zimbabwe, in the colleges of engineering, of medicine, of veterinary sciences, of teachers training, also of in the area of paramedical services. Zimbabwe has colleges which can accommodate our students in their universities.
How many students are going to Zimbabwe from South Sudan?
200 students have already left for Zimbabwe for various colleges at various universities, about 200 already.
And now what about from Zimbabwe coming to South Sudan? We understand that there is some kind of agreement in that respect as well.
Yes, we are expecting from Zimbabwe at least to help us with trained teachers and also lecturers who can help in our universities. Also in the area of nursing, where we need some nurses in our hospital, like midwives, because our maternal mortality rate is very high.
That was Studio 7's Dimyake Mwakalele.
That's it for tonight. My name is Chris Gande. Good evening, Zimbabwe.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye saying good night.